Fatima, where heaven and earth have met. Since the day our Blessed Mother visited her cousin Elizabeth, she has never stopped visiting her people and care for them in time of need, reminding them of the gospel of her son. This happened in Guadalupe, Mexico, and then in Lourdes, France. Let us now hear what was the purpose and message of her visitation in Fatima on every 13th of the month from May to October in 1917. Here now is the director of Radio Maria Canada, Father George Amaro.
Welcome, brothers and sisters, to another program about Fatima. That this will be the episode 45 and the last one about hell. I hope to finish this subject today. The vision of the little shepherds in Fatima to explain how come they saw hell represented as eternal torture. And then I will hope to bring you outside this logic of hell and heaven, to go beyond that and to have a relationship with God that goes beyond heaven and hell. So what the little shepherds saw, it was the hell portrayed as an eternal suffering, the one that I said that we said that it's not the real hell, because it doesn't go well with a merciful God. Although it is our condemnation, He doesn't condemn us; we condemn ourselves. But still, it doesn't go well, because God allows it to exist, because there is nothing, there is nobody beyond God, and God created everything from nothing. So everything exists, everything that exists, exists because God allows it to exist. That's the omnipotence of God. So if that hell, eternal, dead, although it's you that choose it, but God would allow it, then it doesn't match with a merciful God. And even for Jacinta, as you heard last time, Jacinta had a hard time to believe that hell. You know, they are there, burning, suffering eternally, and they never die, or they never get out of there. You know, that's the inquiries that we made, and you know, Jacinta could not understand it. And so the same thing. So well, why is it portrayed like that? So the thing is, we know that hell is eternal death. Why is it portrayed in that way? Well, first of all, you have to understand that in the Bible, the prophecies are warnings. Many of the prophecies are warnings. That means that if you continue in this line of behavior, this will happen to you. It doesn't have to happen. A good example of this is Jonah. Jonah, if you don't convert, Nineveh will be destroyed. Well, Nineveh was not destroyed, although Jonah wanted it to be destroyed, but because they converted, they converted. So prophecies are warnings, but if you take up the warning and you behave accordingly, then the prophecy doesn't, it's not going to happen. So, and the warnings are also pedagogic. And although it is the old pedagogy, the pedagogy of fear, it's still the pedagogy that you can use with kids. With kids, you cannot reason certain things. You have to scare them. Once the kids can reason, then the scare doesn't work anymore. But of course, you can certain things, they don't understand them. They are too small. For instance, don't put your fingers in the plug. Well, you cannot explain what is electricity and so forth. So you have to scare them until later on they will understand and that they shouldn't do that. But for adult people, scaring them, it's not a good thing. And in the Bible, we are dealing with adults, and the church deals with adults, cannot use this pedagogy of fear. It has to be another pedagogy. So it's the pedagogy of fear on the background of the hell being portrayed that way. Now, another way to explain it is this sentence that belongs to Thomas Aquinas, and it's a very important theologic sentence. In Latin, quidquid recipitur, ad modum recipientis recipitur. What is received according to the capacity of the receiver. This Thomist principle helps us to understand and conceptualize the visions, and in the case of Fatima, it is fundamental to the explanation of the vision of hell. When Our Lady showed the children the vision of hell, she could not show them the true reality of what hell is truly like. It would be like putting the sea inside a hole in the sand on the shore, paraphrasing the tale of the St. Augustine in Understanding the Mystery of the Holy Trinity. Now, this short story. St. Augustine was in the beach and strolling and trying to understand the mystery of the Holy Trinity, and he saw a boy that was bringing water to a little hole in the sand. And he was bringing water from the ocean to put in the hole in the sand. And so he was saying, and St. Augustine, what are you doing? Asked, well, I'm bringing the ocean to this hole. I'm bringing the ocean to this hole. You cannot do that. It's impossible, St. Augustine said. Well, it is also impossible for you, the boy said, to understand the mystery of the Holy Trinity. So the mind of God is like the ocean. Our mind is like the little hole. You cannot put the ocean inside the little hole. So there are things we cannot understand them. And so God reveals himself, and he revealed himself through Jesus, that he's a human being. Because a human being we can understand, but God himself, difficult to understand, you know. It's easier to say what God is not than to say what God is. So our mind cannot conceptualize. We know about God enough for us to have a relationship with him, but we never know about God everything, because our mind cannot. The part, we are just a speck of the big mind of God. And the speck, which is a part, cannot understand the whole that is God. So, using these, so what is received according to the capacity of the receiver. So, having this in mind, what the children saw was a recreation in their own mind of all the preaching that up to them they had heard up to that time, they have heard from priests, who in those days never tired of frightening people with the fire of hell. And also images, representations, graphical representations in small pictures of hell and purgatory. And by the way, purgatory and hell are portrayed the same way, fire and the souls in human shape suffering there. The only difference is that purgatory is temporary and hell is eternal. So, and these kids, they had lots of preaching about hell and lots of representations, even at the churches. There was always pictures in the old. I still know some old churches in Castile, Spain. All churches have a picture of purgatory and on the hell. Not really of hell. They don't have pictures because, no, it is like if you enter here, there is no hope. Dante Alighieri said, put aside all hope, all of you that enter here. So why portraying hell? But as I said, purgatory is portrayed the same way as hell. And so you see those pictures in churches. Once again, what is there in this experience? So you see, they saw hell as they would be able to understand it. Now, for us, hell is eternal death. How can you represent eternal death? There is no representation of eternal death. There is no representation of going back to nothing. How can you represent nothing? There is no graphic representation of nothing. It reminds me of a joke. This little kid wanted to make fun of his teacher, and the teacher told, "Well, make a drawing, you know, a free drawing. You can draw whatever you want to draw." And this boy presented the white sheet in white with nothing on it. He wanted to make fun of the teacher. And so the teacher asked, "What have you drawn?" "I don't see anything in this paper, in this sheet of paper. It's all white." "Oh, no," he said, the boy. "There is the Jewish people crossing the Red Sea." The Jewish people crossing the Red Sea in a white sheet of paper. There is nothing. "Well, okay, well, where is the sea?" "Well, the sea has opened for them to pass." "Well, then, where are the Jews?" "Oh, they already passed." So, you see, you cannot represent them because they have gone already. They have passed already. So the sea is open. You don't represent the open sea. And then they are already passed. There is no Jews. But, it's a joke. So there is no way you can represent nothing. And so they saw the hell according to the way they conceptualize it. Now, it's very much what is the divine intervention here or the divine revelation here? Well, it's a bit like the miracle of the sun, which is a natural phenomena, a natural meteorological phenomena. The in divine intervention is that happened when God wanted it to happen. And the divine revelation here is not the way children saw hell, but the occurrence of the apparitions provoked by the lady. But the occurrence that the lady provoked them to see hell on their minds according to the way they understand hell, but it's that they did not want to see it. It was provoked by the lady. Therefore, the experience in itself was initiated by Our Lady. The particular way this experience was brought to life by the children has to do with their capacity to comprehend hell and with the way they have always imagined it. So they saw hell as the way they always have imagined it. They couldn't see it in any other way because what is received according to the capacity of the receiver. So Our Lady of Fatima could not pour into those little minds an eternal death, to see eternal death, they could not picture it. So she put in their minds the way they could picture it, the way they always understood it. So paraphrasing St. Thomas Aquinas' principle, what the children saw, they saw it according to their mental capacity and the images of their own world view, the images that have been thrown at them for many years, and that's the way they saw it. And remember that many prophecies of Fatima, they were warnings. And of course these, because we fear more suffering than that, as a warning, suffering is more dreadful than just tell that you die and you just vanished forever. Okay, so I want you just before the pause, I want to announce you a poem, a sonnet. It's called Sonnet because it has two groups of four verses and after two groups of three verses. That's called a sonnet. There is this sonnet about establish a relationship with God that is based on love, not on the fear of hell and not on the price of heaven. You don't love God because you want to go to heaven, and you don't fear God because you don't fear God because he might throw you into hell. So it's a Spanish poem from 16th century. Is anonymous. Nobody knows who wrote it. Some people thought that it was Lope de Vega, but he is not. And the author of this poem chose to be anonymous because these things, there is matter for the Inquisition to pick up and to throw into the fire, the real hell in this life that the Inquisition caused for so many people. So there is, so we chose to be anonymous. It chose to be anonymous, and nobody knows who wrote this poem. But this poem, it belonged to this 20th century, the mentality that we have such a poem on the 16th century. That's an amazing thing. That's an amazing thing. I will tell you about the poem, and I will comment the poem, and I hope that you will establish a relationship with God based on love, not based on wanting to go to hell, to heaven, and avoiding hell.
Thank you.
Welcome back then to this last episode on hell. And the poem says, I'm going to read it in Spanish, the original, and then try to translate it, and then read a translation of it, and then comment upon each part of the poem. So it says, No me mueve mi Dios para quererte, el cielo que me tienes prometido, ni me mueve el infierno tan temido para dejar por eso de ofenderte. Tú me mueves, Señor, muéveme el verte, clavado en una cruz y escarnecido, muéveme ver tu cuerpo tan herido, muéveme tus afrentas y tu muerte. Muéveme, en fin, tu amor, y en tal manera que aunque no hubiera cielo yo te amara, y aunque no hubiera infierno te temiera. No me tienes que dar porque te quiera, pues aunque lo que espero no esperara, lo mismo que te quiero te quisiera. So the translation is more or less like that, like this. It doesn't move me, my God, to love you, the heaven you have promised me. Nor does the dread hell moves me to stop offending you. You move me, Lord, moves me to see you nailed to a cross and mocked, moves me to see your body so wounded, moves me your injuries, insults, and your death, moves me in the end your love, and in such a way that even if there was no heaven, I would still love you. And even if there was no hell, I would still fear you. You don't have to give me because I love you, or even if what I hope would not wait, the same as I love you, I would love you. Or even if what I hope for, it wouldn't exist, that is hell, the same way I love you, I would still love you. I would love you all the same, that means. So, the poem wants to say that your relationship with God not in the fear. So you behave well because of fear of hell, that's not a good thing. Or you behave well because you want to go to heaven, that's not a good thing. That would be an interested love. No, if you want to say that somebody loves you, but not real love, it's just interested in things that you have. You ask that person, why do you love me? Why do you love me? There is no answer to that question. Whatever you say, it proves that your love is not unconditional. It's conditioned to the reason, I love you because you are beautiful. Well, what if I have an accident and I am not beautiful anymore? You stop loving me? Oh, but I love you because you cook well. Oh, well, what if someday I cannot cook? Will your love for me stop? And, well, I love you because whatever, because you say it's wrong. I love you because you are you, because you exist, and nobody exists like you. So love is unconditional. So you cannot say to God, I love you, God, because I want to go to heaven. And I fear you because I don't want to go to hell. That's not a good reason for behaving or misbehaving. Now, you have to understand that the fear of God is not be scared of God. The fear of God, which is, we say, love and fear of God, it's a fear that's a consequence of love. It's not being scared because God might scold you, might punish you. It's that fear that comes from when you love somebody you always take extra care not to, and you take care of the words that you say and the things that you do not to offend the person that you love. So it's a consequence of love. It's not because you fear the person. No, I'm thinking of, you know, the love, the romantic love, or at least in the romantic stage of love between a man and a woman. You know, they always show the best behavior when they are together. Why? Because they fear to offend the other person. It's only when they go out of that stage of love, then they start showing the worst behavior. But in that romantic phase of love, they show the best behavior because they fear to offend. So it's that sort of fear, not being scared of God. So these verses are addressed to God himself, but it's not a catechesis. That's not pretend to tell us how you should pray. But you see, it's a catechesis of how you should relate to God. So the first four verses, "It doesn't move me, my God, to love you, the heaven you have promised me, nor does the dread hell moves me to stop offending you." Even if there is hell, I still offend you. Because it's not hell that prevents me from offending you, and it's not heaven that makes me love you. No, I just love you and I just fear you by itself. So even if there was no hell or there was no heaven, I would still love you. I would still fear you. So the first four verses, they are defiant. Defiant not of God, but defiant of the old theology that based the relationship with God, that you know you love God because you want to go to heaven and you fear God because you want to avoid hell. It is not. That's a wrong way of relating to God. The basis to relate to God is love. You know, what you do things for because of duty, you don't do them well. If you do things because of you want to get money, you don't do them well. You know, if I tell you what doctor would you choose to go, what doctor would you go to? The doctor that practices medicine because he wants to be rich, he wants to get money, or the doctor that practices medicine because he wants to alleviate suffering, he wants to cure people, he loves his job, he loves seeing doing good things. So, and he became a doctor not because he wanted money, he became a doctor by vocation, by love. So, to which doctor would you go? Of course, to the one that does it for love, not the one that does it for money. But doctor and teachers, whatever profession, even priests, you might find them, they do it for money and not for love. Teachers, they teach for money, not for love. They don't care about the students, whether they learn or not. They just fulfill the hours they teach. They don't prepare the lessons. They don't care. As long as the money comes, that's what they care about. And then in so many professionals, and today that's what we see a lot. That's what I see a lot. Builders, they build evil. They don't build things well. Things, they get broken. You know, they get broken all of a sudden. I mean, why? Because people don't pride themselves in their creation, in what they do. You see, God prided himself in everything that he did, and he liked it, because he did it out of love. But so many things that we don't do them out of love. We do them out of duty. Oh, I have to. That's the wrong energy to do anything. I love to. That's the right energy. I love to do what I do. And if you love to do what you do, you never get tired. And you do it well. You do it nicely. Okay, so same thing with God. Don't love God because He's going to give you heaven. And don't fear God because He might send you to hell. That's wrong. Forget about hell. Forget about heaven. Just love God. Heaven is the consequence of your love. It should not be the cause of your love. Heaven should be the consequence of your love. Should not be the trigger of your love. If heaven is the trigger of your love, that's a wrong love. That's a wrong love. It's a fake love. It's an interested love. It's not an unconditional love. Love God unconditionally, even if there was no heaven. Fear God unconditionally, even if there was no hell. So, those are the first four verses. And then the second four verses, this person confesses himself. First he says, what it doesn't move me. So it's like the negative theology. You say what God is not. It's easier to say what God is not than to say what God is. So this doesn't move me. This doesn't move me. Now I'm going to tell you, God, what moves me. You move me. You. Not your hell, not your heaven. It's you, Lord, that moves me. It moves me seeing you nailed to a cross and mocked. It moves me seeing you nailed to a cross and mocked. You know, remember that this poetry is done in front of the crucifix. It moves me to see your body so wounded, and it moves me your agony and your death. This moves me. You only pay love with love. You cannot pay love with any other thing. It's with love. So God loves you, and He loved you first. So you love Him back. The love of God for you, and He showed it because He said nobody has more love than the one that gives his life to his friends. So He shows you His love, and now that love provokes love in you. The love that Jesus has shown to you, although you are a sinner and although you are a bad person, that love provokes love in you, moves you, moves your heart, moves your mind, and moves your hands. Again, paraphrasing this, I am not frightened by your punishments, nor am I encouraged by your rewards. Is not your punishments that frighten me, and are not your rewards that encourage me to be a good person? Now, these second four verses, yes, there is something that moves me. Is you that moves me, that moves me to love you. It is you who have died and suffered graciously for me. Is that what moves me? To love you. And then, death and suffering have conquered the heart of the poet. They make him fall in love, and it is not a question of returning any favor, but something that springs out of his heart. He's not feeling obligated. He's not the same being as being moved or better moved. It happens just like that, that if you have a human heart and you see somebody suffering and you are not moved by that suffering, then you are not human. You are not human. And if you see that suffering is because of you, then you can only, you are moved. So, and now the last three verses, the second to the last three verses, and the last, it moves me in the end, in the end. After all, what moves me is your love. And in such a way, that even if there was no heaven, I would still love you. And even if there was no hell, I would still fear you. So, again, love and fear are consequences, not causes. So it's not the hell and heaven that cause my love and my fear, but the opposite. My love, as a consequence, my love, the consequence of my love will be heaven. The consequence of my fear will be hell. But they spring up from seeing you suffering for me. You don't have to give me because I love you, for even if what I hope I would not hope for, the same as I love you, I would still love you. Okay, so this is it, brothers and sisters. I hope that this is to exhort you that go beyond the punishment of hell and go beyond the price and the reward of heaven to establish a relationship with God. Establish a relationship with God and with the incarnated God mostly, God made man, Jesus Christ. It's out of love that you should relate to Jesus, because any other relationship establishing with Jesus is not good. It's not good. So you can put away heaven and hell out of your mind. Have love. And because you love Jesus, you fear to offend him. You fear to offend him. That's it. That's all you should, that's the way you should relate to Jesus. And in finishing these episodes about hell, I want to share with you a metaphor. My mind is a metaphorical one. And it came to me that we experience that heaven, hell, and purgatory in every day. Every day, we experience these things. So when they come, we are already used to them. Now, how do we experience that? When we fall asleep. When we fall asleep, that experiencing that, as a matter of fact, some people even die in their sleep. Some people die in a peaceful death, that they just pass. They just pass. They let themselves go. It's like falling asleep. Dying is like falling asleep. As a matter of fact, this is not my invention. As a matter of fact, coimiterium, cemetery, the word cemetery comes from Greek. And in Greek, cemetery is coimiterium. What is a coimiterium? Is a dormitory. Is a dormitory. Is where people sleeps. Okay, now, so passing to the other side, this we see that as a passing. Now, passing to the other side, it looks like you fall asleep in this side, in the real life, and you wake up in the life of dreams. And if the dreams are good, that's heaven. Look, the only way I can relate to my dad and my mother, because they've passed away, is when I dream with them. That's for me is heaven. I dream with them as if they were alive. Because there is life after sleep. You know, there is life after sleep. You are alive. And you are relating to people, and you are having dreams that are very real to you. Nobody dreams that is dreaming. So those are real.
Those are real. And if they are good dreams, that's like heaven, experiencing heaven. And if they are bad dreams, then it's like experience purgatory. It's like experience purgatory. Because purgatory is things that have bad things that happen in our life. So the dreams are two things: what we dread, what we fear, and what we wish it should happen to us. What we fear that might happen to us are nightmares. What we would like to happen to us, wish fulfillment, are good dreams. Now, but there is a time, so good dreams is heaven, bad dreams is purgatory. Where is hell? Well, hell is when you are not dreaming. And you are not dreaming is like if you are eternally dead. Because there is nothing in your brain. Your brain is thinking of nothing. It's emptiness. And if you want to know if somebody is dreaming, you look at his eyes when he's sleeping. You look at the eyes. If the eyes, of course, the closed eyes, if the eyes are moving, that person is dreaming. If the eyes are not moving, that person is not dreaming. So is REM and non-REM. What is REM? REM is rapid eye movement. When you move your eyes rapidly, you are dreaming. When you are not moving your eyes rapidly and there is no movement in your eyes, so non-REM, non-rapid eye movement, that it means you are not dreaming. And when you are not dreaming, there is nothing in your brain, there is nothing in your mind, there is nothing in your consciousness. It's like if it is as if you didn't exist anymore. It's, of course, is a time of deep sleep and deep resting, because if you don't have these times during your sleep hours, you wake up tired. If you dream too much and you don't have these times of non-REM, you wake up tired. But those just to say that these times are the times of eternal death. So, brothers and sisters, take this as a metaphor. When you fall asleep, it's like dying. You wake up in the other side, in the life of dreams. Good dreams are heaven. Bad dreams are purgatory, something that you did wrong or somebody did wrong to you, traumas that you need to purify from. Non-dreaming is like eternal death, is like returning to nothing.
You have been listening to Fatima, Where Heaven and Earth Have Met, with Father George Amaro. Thank you for joining us today, and we pray that this program is an encouragement to you. Please join us here on Radio Maria Canada, where Father George Amaro will continue his teaching about our Blessed Mother and the significance of Fatima.